It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. It is our fall membership drive. Help Central Time get off to a great start with your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Here's a great reason to pledge. Coming up on Food Friday, celebrated food writer Ruth Reichel joins us with the recipes that she says saved her life.
First hunting season is coming up, and one Democratic lawmaker wants to impose some limits on where people can hunt and trap.
State Senator Fred Risser proposed legislation this week that would ban hunting and limit the types of traps people could use in all state parks. Just a few years ago, Republican lawmakers made hunting on public lands legal, with exceptions for public safety and species protection.
Joining us now to talk about his proposals is Democratic Senator Fred Risser of Madison. Senator Risser, welcome to the show.
Well, glad to be on.
Well, why did you decide to introduce bills to ban hunting and trapping in state parks?
Well, I enjoy the outdoors, and a lot of people do. And I like to enjoy the outdoors during hunting season. And I, quite frankly, I'm afraid to go into state parks that allow hunting. I think that other people feel the same way. People ought to have the opportunity to enjoy the outdoors, enjoy it with their families, enjoy it with their pets, enjoy it without being fear of being shot up. And it seems to me that the hunters of this state have tens of thousands of acres to hunt in. They don't have to hunt in public state parks.
Now, it seems as though every year, maybe every other year, there's an incident where a hunter will shoot another hunter. Have there been incidences where a hunter shoots someone out for a hike or shoots a pet?
I don't have any statistics on that, but I do know this, that people are fearful of going in state parks where they are allowing hunting, and perhaps they stay away.
Now, in terms of controlling the deer population, state parks often harbor a lot of deer there. Is it important, do you think, to keep that population under control even in state parks?
I don't think state parks take up that much of our territory. There's deer all over the state, and the deer harvest is heavy outside of state parks. I don't think it's particularly heavy within state parks. And if a few deer survive, let them. I think that the more important thing is that the general public can enjoy picnics, can enjoy the outdoors. They shouldn't have to forget the outdoors during hunting season.
Now, you mentioned trapping as well. We've been speaking mostly about hunting, but trapping is another issue in these bills. Why trapping?
Well, I think trapping is maybe even more important than hunting, because my bill just outlaws steel jaw and body gripping traps. There's a lot of humane traps, but these jaw traps are inhumane. And they not only can collect wild animals, they can collect domestic animals. And we have many cases where dogs and cats are caught in these traps, and they can do an awful lot of damage to the individual that's trapped. There's very humane traps available. There's no need that we have the steel jaw, body gripping traps, which can mutilate not only wild animals, but domestic animals.
Hunting and trapping in state parks was just passed a couple of years ago. Why not give this a few years before we decide whether or not it's working, whether there are safety concerns?
Well, I think the law was appropriate years ago, and the law was liberalized several years ago to permit hunting and trapping in state parks. I opposed that law, but a majority supported it. I still think it was a mistake, and I think that society is interested in protecting hunters in hunting areas and protecting the general public that wants to do other things in other areas. And to set aside a few of the state parks, all the state parks, in my opinion, against hunting is, in my opinion, good public policy.
Are there particular state parks that you feel are of greater concern than others in the state?
Well, we have about 55 state parks in Wisconsin. Some of them are very small, and some of them are larger. And I'm not ready to designate one park against another park. I think all the parks should be free of hunting during hunting season.
Now, current legislation allowing trapping in state parks lets the Department of Natural Resources set regulations on where trapping is allowed. Why go further than that? Why take it further than the DNR?
My bill does not outlaw trapping. It outlaws certain types of traps. It outlaws steel jaw and body gripping traps and certain snares. There are very humane traps that can trap animals without tearing them apart.
Now, what kind of response is your legislation getting so far?
Well, at present time, I'm circulating the bills to get co-authorship, and we'll see how many people want to join. I've talked to some people that are for it and some people that are against it. So it's an issue that divides some people.
Now, what kind of timeline are you looking at to get this bill passed?
Well, we hope to have the bill circulated yet this by early October and have it introduced. It would be referred to an appropriate committee, and then it's to get the committee chairman to or chairperson to hold a hearing. It's a long process, but the legislature meets again in October and November, meets next spring. Hopefully, we'll go through the process.
Now, both houses of the state government and the governor's office, as you know, are controlled by Republicans, so it's unlikely that this bill would be passed. So given that, why do you think it's important to introduce this anyway?
Oh, it's very important because this is a discussion which may take several years. A lot of bills have to be introduced over and over again before they're passed, and I think the discussion is worth having, and I'm optimistic that the legislature will eventually change its makeup. In any event, to talk about matters of public concern is the purpose of the legislative body.
Now, to circle back just once more before I let you go, now you said that you're fearful when you're walking in the parks. What would you say to a hunter who said the parks are safe, and if someone feels that they are unsafe, they can wear some bright colors, maybe some blaze orange, and enjoy the parks, and they're going to be fine?
You mean to tell me that people that take their families to a picnic are supposed to wear some sort of orange to protect themselves? I don't think that that is a particularly appropriate idea. I think that it's easier for hunters to use the tens of thousands of acres we've set aside for hunting and leave the public parks for the public.
Senator Risser, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was State Senator Fred Risser talking about his proposals to limit hunting and some trapping in state parks. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Just a few minutes ago, we heard from State Senator Fred Risser about why he wants to limit hunting and trapping in state parks.
Well, now we're joined by former DNR Secretary George Meyer, who says the proposed changes are unnecessary. He's now the executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. George, welcome back.
Good to be on the show. Thank you very much.
What are your take on these proposals from Senator Risser?
I believe they're really not necessary, and as I understand, the first bill will ban all hunting in state parks, and in fact, there's been hunting in state parks for decades, mainly going back a long time because of the impact deer have on the trees and the forests in the state parks have caused damage. Now, a couple of years ago, it was expanded to more hunting use in state parks, and probably went too far, quite candidly. I know our organization thought it went too far, and we work with parks groups and trail users and DNR to, in fact, reduce the impact and the areas in the parks and the time of year in various parks that hunting could take place. And most of it would be archery hunting, although there would be some expanded use of firearms.
And no, you're saying it went too far in some respects. What specifically went too far?
Well, the way the first proposals were made by the legislature and then by DNR staff, there would have been conflicts between hunters and other park users, and that was not in anyone's interest. You know, I know our organization truly respects the other park users, did not want to see their recreational experiences adversely affected. And from a hunting standpoint, you don't want other people around when you're hunting, and you can't effectively hunt. And most importantly, to sportsmen and women, you don't want to be in a situation that's unsafe, where whether you're archery hunting or firearm hunting, you can cause danger. Hunting, the hunters in this state are extremely safety conscious and did not want that kind of situation. And there was a great compromise worked out by the Natural Resources Board. And the proof is we've had two hunting seasons involving hunting in state parks. And I've checked with DNR, even as recently as today, and there's been reports in the past, there have not been any incidents or difficulties. And they've been watching for it. We've been watching for it and would have changed our, made fine-tuning to cut back if there were conflicts.
No, I just want to make sure I understand you. You're saying there were no reports in the last 2 years, is it? But that
yes.
There were reports in the past of what?
There were no reports in the last 2 years of conflicts or any safety issues between the limited hunting that takes place and the regular, normal hiking and other users of the state parks.
Are you hearing anything from users of the state parks saying that they feel similarly to Senator Risser, that when they're out there during hunting season, they're worried that there's the possibility that they might be shot?
Well, that's a fear, and I can understand there are concerns that people might have. But in fact, there have not been any incidents. And, you know, as time goes on, people understand that nothing has happened, so there's no reason to fear. Even in the state gun deer season, when there's 600,000 hunters in the woods in the state, there are very limited even numbers of accidents in that situation, much less the very limited hunting that takes place in state parks. And there have been no incidents in state parks.
Now, Senator Risser, as we heard just a little while ago, said that there's plenty of land here in Wisconsin that has been designated for hunting. There's no reason, as he sees it, to do so in the state parks as well. What do you say to that?
I think there's two parts to the question. One is you do need some deer hunting in state parks to protect the parks themselves. And you, in those parks where hasn't been enough hunting, you can see deer browse lines and impact on trees. So you need some level of hunting to manage the deer herd. And while we do have, good public lands for hunting in the state, if, in fact, these lands, along with those lands, can be safely hunted without causing any impacts or even notice of people that there's hunting taking place, why not?
We're talking with George Meyer right now, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. We're getting his reaction to legislation proposed by State Senator Fred Risser, which calls for an end to hunting in state parks and an end to some kinds of trapping in state parks as well. Senator Risser says that parkgoers are concerned for their safety, concerned that perhaps they could be maybe entangled in a trap or maybe shot by a hunter who was there.
Sure.
Now, let's look at those traps for a moment. Now, Senator Risser had said that, in his opinion, steel jaw and body traps are inhumane. What are your thoughts on that as it pertains to use in a state park?
Well, let's talk about that because this is a great success story. We are very closely associated with the Wisconsin Trappers Association. They are a member organization of our organization. When the public hearing, after the first public hearing when these rules were going before the public, the trappers and we went up to the DNR and said, listen, we don't want this controversy with the traps. And the trappers voluntarily, by the time the second of the six hearings came about, testified, we're willing to just go with dog-proof traps that will not cause any damage to humans or our pets walking in the park. And, in fact, they proposed to the Natural Resources Board limit these other kinds of traps that Senator Risser is talking about. We don't want them. We're willing in this situation to reduce conflict to just go with a trap that is proven to be pet-proof and human-proof from getting entangled in it. And that has, in fact, what the rule has been by the Natural Resources Board. And once again, there have been no incidents at all in terms of trouble with any trapping in the last couple of years. So, in fact, that second piece of legislation is unnecessary. The trappers have already agreed to restrict the type of trap that they'll use in state parks. They have done so because they're just good, conscious citizens and towards other park users.
Is there any data that you've seen that would indicate whether the flow of people using the state parks decreases during hunting season?
We have not seen that, and I understand that. And I think that's maybe a better question framed towards the DNR. But as I understand, park use has been very substantial during the fall and in spring. There's some limited spring hunting from turkeys. But even that gets cut off. The hunting gets cut off before the normal park picks up. And in fall, I've been in the state parks. I've not seen a decrease. Now, that's an anecdote, but state park use in fall seems to have been strong the last couple of years, and park attendance has been strong. So maybe DNR's more statistical information. I surely have not seen it, and I think they might have reflected that when they did an analysis of the impact in their minds of the hunting and trapping in state parks and did not bring up any discussion that park use was down. I think that would have been a good indicator for them if it had happened.
George, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much for having us on the show. Thank you.
That was George Meyer discussing the recent proposal to limit hunting and trapping in Wisconsin State Parks. George Meyer is the executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. Coming up, celebrated food writer Ruth Reichel joins us to talk about her new cookbook. It's called My Kitchen Year.
It is Food Friday, and it is the first day of the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Now, a shout-out to all Food Friday fans. Time to make a pledge in support of your favorite food radio at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. If you've ever been inspired to try making something or eating something based on something you heard on Food Friday, now's the time to make that pledge of support. Veronica, you have been inspired to cook things, I think, by Food Friday.
I have in the past. I went home one weekend and spent the better part of a Saturday making banh mi, those Vietnamese sandwiches.
Oh, yeah. You were on a banh mi
craze. Yeah, I was. I made the egg patties and the homemade sriracha mayonnaise and the pickled veggies. Oh, so delicious.
And you kept forgetting to bring them in to share with old Rob.
Oh, no, I didn't forget.
Well, my thing, which I did share, I was inspired to do fridge pickles this year, and I made this awesome zucchini relish after we did a show. Then I made a huge batch and brought some of that in, and that's
very
been a
tasty,
favorite.
Yeah.
Now, how about you? Have you gone home and made something? Have you been inspired to expand your culinary horizons by Food Friday? If so, make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And now, when Gourmet magazine folded, editor Ruth Reichel was devastated. Without a packed to-do list and lots of time in her country home to think about what she'd lost, she turned back to the basics: fresh, inspiring ingredients and cooking.
Reichel's new cookbook is part memoir, part recipe share. Along the way, she tells the story of how the recipes in her new cookbook brought her back to life and renewed her joy in the creation of food and the enjoyment of life.
Ruth Reichel was the restaurant critic for both the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times. She was the editor-in-chief of Gourmet magazine for 10 years, and her new cookbook is called My Kitchen Year, 136 Recipes That Saved My Life. Ruth, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be here.
Well, your new cookbook was born more or less on the day that Gourmet magazine folded. And on that day, when you were putting your stuff into boxes and maybe having a goodbye with your staff, some last food together, did you have any idea then what you'd do next?
No, I didn't. I was devastated. And, you know, I've been working since I was 16. I've gone from one job to another. And I kind of lost myself. You know, if I'm not Ruth Reichel, editor of Gourmet, or Ruth Reichel, restaurant critic of the New York Times, I didn't know who I was. I was used to that comma. And I talk about it in the book that there was a while there where I started having dreams about being homeless. You know, I just sort of looked down the road and thought, you know, we're going to be out in the street. I'm never going to get another job. I'm in my 60s. It's all over. And I did what I always do when I'm scared. I went into the kitchen.
Yeah, talk about those first experiments, those first steps toward coming back and really cooking again.
Well, you know, it was very unconscious. It was, you know, I had for years been doing very result-oriented cooking. You know, the kind of cooking you do when, you know, your family starts calling you and you're in the office at 7 o'clock and they're going, when are you going to come home and make dinner? And you run home and you make dinner with your coat on. And now I actually had time to remember how much I love the physical act of cooking. And I wandered through grocery stores, and I went to Chinatown, and I talked to bakers and butchers and cheesemakers, and I started collecting ingredients. And I remembered that cooking is a journey, that what's more important for me is the getting there, not the result.
Now, I want to quote from your book. At one point, you've had foot surgery. You've broken your foot into four different places. And you wrote, "I miss the daily transformations, fruit ripening, dough rising, bread toasting onto golden slabs. I've always thought of these elemental pleasures as minor diversions. But now I understood that they're the glue that holds my life together." Can you talk more about that realization about what food actually is for you?
Yeah, it's... You know, what I learned in this year was that I've spent most of my life waiting for the wonderful, the great big moment. And that for me, food is a reminder of everything that's good about being alive. And that when you pay attention, when you stop to listen to the sound water makes as it boils, when you pay attention to the wonderful smell of onions caramelizing in butter, when you peel a peach and pay attention to that color that's hidden right beneath the skin, when you feel the knife cutting through an onion, they're wonderful moments, and they give you reason to want to keep living and to be alive. And I realize that for me, the secret to life is to find joy in ordinary things.
See, now you're making me want to just be cooking right now, the way you talk about it. That is so wonderful. And it's feels so instrumental, as like you said earlier, that we don't take the time to appreciate the joy of it.
Right. And, you know, I mean, part of what this book is about, I mean, for me, cooking is a total pleasure. But I'm hoping that, you know, maybe you're a gardener or a painter, but it's the same lesson. It's pay attention to the thing that you really love and figure out a way to take pleasure in the everyday. And, you know, I mean, food for me is just, you know, we all eat three meals a day. It's what connects us. And so why would you not pay attention to this?
And you write about, at one point, you're snowed in the winter in your home, and you look out the window and you see a moose, and the sighting of this moose kind of leads its way to a celebratory meal, a grilled cheese. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I mean, have you ever seen a moose?
I've never seen a moose. I want to.
I mean, it was so astonishing. I was just standing in the kitchen looking out the window, and this magnificent creature walks up the driveway. And it was like looking out and seeing an elephant. It was, it felt like a little touch of magic had just come. And I was so overcome that I couldn't speak. And I was trying to say to my husband, look out the window, look out the window. And I had to actually go get him and drag him because I was like, And then I thought, you know, this is extraordinary. We have to celebrate it. And a great grilled cheese sandwich is one of the most wonderful foods on earth. And I think my grilled cheese sandwich, which the recipe is in the book, but it's a combination of gooey and crisp, and it is a celebration. And I just said to Michael, you know, I'm going to make these sandwiches, and we're going to just sit and watch this creature until he goes away, which he did.
We've got that grilled cheese recipe from Ruth Reichel at the Central Time Facebook page. And remember, as we get this amazing inspiration to cook, to appreciate cooking, to enjoy the feel and the taste and the smell of the cooking, make your pledge in support of these great Food Friday conversations right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We'll get some more practical advice coming up from Ruth, too, today. And remember, we get this from people like Ruth, from our own Lori Skelton, every week on Friday. Really helpful advice, things we can actually do in our kitchen that make our lives better. Pledge in support of Food Friday, Central Time. anytime, WPR at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I got to tell you, this is not your average grilled cheese sandwich. She calls this the diva of grilled cheese. And it's got some, I am a grilled cheese connoisseur. And I had never heard of some of the things that Ruth Reichel does to make the grilled cheese really work, like putting mayonnaise on the bread to keep it from scalding in the pan. And she also has another little secret about sprinkling cheese on top of that. So I'm going to let her speak to that when we come back. Right now, make that pledge in support of all the great programming, in particular in support of Food Friday, this program that is part of your weekend kickoff, gets you excited to be cooking and eating over the weekend. Make that pledge at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
Okay, Ruth, we gave away a couple secrets there. We've got the whole thing on the Central Time Facebook page. What makes grilled cheese, the diva of grilled cheese, awesome?
Well, there are a few things. I mean, one, you have to use really good cheddar. I like Montgomery. There are plenty of, plenty of local cheddars that are wonderful. I use a number of different kinds of onions, scallions, shallots, red onion, whatever you happen to have on hand, and mix it with the grated cheese. But the real secret to this is, and I just discovered this because once when I was making it, some of the cheese fell out onto the pan and it stuck to the bread, and it makes this really crisp crust on the outside. So I slather the outside with mayonnaise, and then I put grated cheese on top of that and put it right against the pan. So the cheese on the outside becomes as crisp as a little Frico, and the inside is all gooey and soft, so you have this wonderful contrast.
It's really good. So what do you serve it with, Ruth?
Well, you could serve it with just nothing. With a glass of beer would be good. If you want a soup, this time of year, I would serve it with roasted tomato soup because it's the very end of the tomato season, and you can get tomatoes that you roast in the oven and make just a very simple soup with basically nothing more than just tomatoes and a little water.
We're talking with Ruth Reichel right now. She was the restaurant critic for both the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times. She has a new cookbook out, and it's called My Kitchen Year, 136 Recipes That Saved My Life.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever been picked up by one of Ruth's recipes or her books, or is there a recipe that saved your life or made you happy in a downtime? Is there a comfort food that you love to cook? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Remember, it's our fall membership drive. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. More with Ruth Reichel coming up on Central Time.
And we're talking with the celebrated food writer Ruth Reichel right now. She was also the editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine for 10 years, the author of numerous books. And she's got a new cookbook out, and it's called My Kitchen Year, 136 Recipes That Saved My Life.
You can join in the conversation now at 800-642-1234 if you've got something that you love to cook, maybe in a bad mood, in a down mood, something that gets you through it. Call 800-642-1234. We'll get a soup recipe, a butternut squash soup, I think, from Ruth in just a moment. First, a reminder, our fall membership drive, make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Support all of your favorite conversations here at WPR, including every week, inspiration and practical advice on Food Friday. Make that pledge. $6 a month, maybe get your own WPR tote bag at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we go to our callers now. We've got Russ on the line in Monroe. Russ, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I wanted to thank Ruth so much for her excellent, talented writing. I've enjoyed it over the years. And when I'm just feeling like staying inside and relaxing, I love to braise chicken with white wine, throw down aromatics and plenty of garlic and really brown the chicken well and pack it back into my lock to stay and put it in the oven for a couple hours. And that's, to me, some of the best food.
Sounds delicious. Sounds delicious, and I know it makes your house smell wonderful while it's cooking.
Yes, and you can put any starch with it, especially mashed potatoes, real buttery mashed potatoes and herby, and, you know, and just eating it knife and fork right off the bone.
Great. Well, Russ, thank you so much for that. And Ruth, that actually makes me think of some of the first food that you made when you were first starting to feel those stirrings of return to life in the kitchen. You made braised pork shoulder and buttermilk potatoes. Tell us about that meal. It sounds kind of similar to Russ's.
Well, I think pork shoulder is a really underused cut. It's you know, the cheapest cut of the pork. It's tender. You take it, you basically just, you know, put it in a pot for a long time, and it tumbles into complete tenderness. I cook it with a mountain of onions and apple cider, and it turns into a wonderful sauce. The buttermilk potatoes came about because I really like the idea of making mashed potatoes, but I don't always want them to be that rich. You know, almost everybody puts some kind of fat into them, you know, butter, cream, olive oil. And it occurred to me one day, I have a farm near me that makes wonderful buttermilk. And I thought, I wonder if I just, you know, cook these potatoes in buttermilk, what will happen? And at first it got all curdled and I got kind of scared. But then when I mashed it, you get a completely different taste. You get wonderful mashed potatoes that have a kind of tanginess. And then I just put a little bit of brown butter on top. And, you know, brown butter is another one of those kind of magic things. You let the butter just turn nut brown, and it sends up this scent you didn't even know that butter could have, as if it had hazelnuts in it. And it adds wonderful flavor, just a little bit of it. And it's a great combination with the pork and the onions and the cider.
Ruth Reichel is making us ridiculously hungry on this edition of Food Friday. And remember, we are looking for your support in the fall membership drive. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Pledge because you appreciate all the conversations you hear here on the Ideas Network. And if you are a Food Friday fan, a regular listener, you tune in every week, you cook the stuff we talk about, make that pledge now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we got the recipe for Ruth Reichel's Diva of a Grilled Cheese Sandwich. Now, Ruth, you recommended a tomato soup because of the season. You sent us one for a season that's coming up, probably sooner than we might admit, butternut squash season. So butternut squash soup for us. Tell us about it.
I love this soup. I mean, this soup is one of the, I mean, it's vegan. It's really easy. And you can't quite believe that you take these few ingredients. I mean, one of the things I love about butternut squash is it's kind of got a plain brown wrapper. And, you know, it looks all unassuming. And then you peel it, and this amazing marigold color comes leaping out at you. And, I mean, this is a soup that you just basically chunk up some butternut squash and some carrots and onions and cook them in water with some potatoes and then puree it. And you get this puree that you cannot believe there's not cream in. And if you drizzle a little bit of olive oil on the top and then, you know, maybe chop up some apple on the top just for a little crisp note on top, it's a really satisfying, really easy soup. And it's got no fat and no meat.
Sounds amazing. And we've got that again over at the Central Time Facebook page. That's a recipe you can make this weekend. The weather is perfect for butternut squash soup. And that reminds me, Ruth, you do follow the seasons long. Obviously now, good time for anything with a squash. How important is it for you to be in tune with the season, the food that's available, the stuff that just feels right for that time of year?
Well, I mean, I really like cooking with local ingredients. I'm lucky enough to live in the Hudson River Valley. I'm surrounded by farmers. And so I buy most of my food from my neighbors. And that means cooking with the seasons. And there's something kind of wonderful about, you know, waiting for those first strawberries. I mean, right now we're waiting for the fall apples, which are, to me, so much more interesting than the warm weather apples that we've gotten up until now. And, You know, we're waiting for those really, those crisp apples with real character. And, you know, I love the fact that the wintered over carrots have a kind of sweetness. When you leave them in the ground after the first frost, they're much sweeter than they are earlier in the season. And you know, that's important to me, to just, you know, cook what I can get right now and appreciate it when I can have it, rather than thinking I can eat everything all year round, even if it has less flavor.
Now, you've got this beautiful recipe book, and there's these beautiful photographs, too. We haven't mentioned that, too. You really feel like you're living life alongside with you. And as you look back at this collection, is there one recipe, these recipes that you say saved your life, that's special to you?
You know, they're all special to me, but one of the first recipes in the book is for a steak sandwich. And it's a very simple thing. I mean, anybody can make a steak sandwich, but it's very meaningful to me because after Gourmet closed, I was contractually obligated to go on the road to promote the Gourmet Cookbook, which was not my book. It belonged to the people who owned my now closed magazine. And the magazine had just closed. And my husband said to me, "You're crazy. Why are you doing this?" And I said, "Well, I kind of have to." And he said, "Well, just promise me you'll eat something when you get to the airport." And I got to the airport, and I was wandering around kind of in a daze looking for something to eat, and I picked up a steak sandwich. And when I went to pay for it, the woman behind the counter said to me, "This one's on me. I loved that magazine, and I'm so sorry." Oh. And so what a steak sandwich means to me is it was a random act of kindness from a stranger, but it completely picked me up. And so whenever I think about a steak sandwich, it's a reminder to me that a random act of kindness at an odd moment can mean a lot to someone.
What a great place to leave it. Ruth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's Ruth Reichel, a longtime food critic, author of the new book, My Kitchen Year, 136 Recipes That Saved My Life.